Hot take for next year. Goodbye, Elon Musk. Goodbye, X. X will die, and he is probably going to be in for a rough ride across the world.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox, for the very final time in 2024. It's been a wild year. I'll do a couple of wrap-up pods over Christmas. I'll do a couple of like just chat, sitting down, me solo pods. So keep an eye out for them over Christmas. But this is the final interview podcast of the year, and it's a little bit different. I did something I wanted to do for a long time. I invited back every single guest that's been on the podcast over the last 5.5 years, and I put on a special VIP event. It was a private party we put on in Baseline in Dublin, thanks to Eamon and Fiona for hosting us there, and just got everyone together. Just, I wanted to see what would happen when you put that many exceptional people in a room. So we had over 95 people confirmed, an incredible night. We had food, we had some drinks, and we did a live podcast. And what you're about to hear is a little piece of that. Some of it was for private only. We did Chatham House Rules. We had a really in-depth discussion, founder to founder. But this is the bit for you. This is the public piece with Michael Corcoran, ex-head of social at Ryanair, now MD at Frankly, and Nadia Adan from Ashford Motors, two of our most popular guests ever, to be honest, this year and ever. And it's a special pod, so we go in depth on social and look ahead to the year and look back on the year that's been. It's a super relaxed pod. It's not kind of the pod you normally associate with this podcast. It's more kind of a sitting down, end of year wrap up special, relaxed, casual conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Let me know if you do. This was live with about 95 people all around us. So it's a little bit different. The audio will be a little bit different, but I think you're going to enjoy it. So here is my live podcast with Nadia and Michael. I wish you a very happy Christmas, whatever you're doing. And I wish you every single success in 2025. Let's make it a big one. Digitalization. What exactly is it and how can it transform your business? Well, the local enterprise office have you covered. Digitalization is incorporating digital tools into your business to improve efficiency and productivity, saving you time, money, and energy. It could be anything from stock control to an online payments or booking system. And now there's a grant for it all. The Grow Digital Voucher helps businesses go digital and pay for those improvements that will make a big difference to the way your business operates. And the best thing about it all, the local enterprise office can handle it all for you. Any business from any sector with up to 50 employees can apply for the Digital for Business audit. And from there, they will give you a bespoke digital roadmap for your business. Once that's sorted, you can apply for the Grow Digital Voucher to help pay for those changes. Simple as that. So, if you want to make those first digital steps with your business to help save you time, money, and energy, talk to your local enterprise office today or go to localenterpriseoffice.ie/digital to find out more or click the link in the description below. Now, on with today's episode.
Right, we'll kick off. We'll do the obligatory who are you and what are you doing here?
Do we? Okay. I'm a nobody in front of somebody. So I'm Michael Corcoran. I'm ex-head of social Ryanair. You might have heard me on Gary's podcast that probably got me about 4 or 5 new business and new clients off the back of it, spilling my beans.
Interesting.
But now I run Frankly, which is a social media consultancy of sorts, which I can talk about a shit about later. But let's talk about some more interesting things.
Hi, my name is Nadia Dan and I'm a secondhand car dealer. I have a garage in Wicklow called Ashford Motors and yeah, apparently I brought down the EV market this year, but I promise it wasn't me.
Oh, you kind of hid the lead there, Nadia, and your social following is a little bit...
Yeah, it's amazing and it's been such a journey and I think it's definitely, I suppose, a woman... selling cars in a man's world, you know, young, mixed race, not a middle-aged white man, you know, and it is what it is. And it's kind of, it's pushing that brand and then pushing the business and trying to just show that you can work in any type of field you want to.
Why did you do the social? Was it like a planned strategy? Because when I look at your social, I said this to you yesterday, when I look at your social, it's so clever, it's so topical, it's on the money. Was this like... Was the brand built on top of social, or was this like something you thought about after?
Yeah, I think it was just something that happened by accident, to be honest with you, because when I started the business, I quit my job in finance in January 2020, and I opened up the garage in March. So when the pandemic just happened, I was like, how am I going to sell cars to people that can't come out to meet me, to see me? So that's when I really went on Instagram initially and just started doing videos. And then I put a bit of money behind it into kind of marketing, high production videos, and then TV kind of noticed. And then I started the TikTok account, and I just started doing anything really just to get views. And it was funny because sometimes the stuff I was putting the most money into and the most time into would do shit. And I'd be like, what's going on? And then the crappiest little 10-second video, any guesses? Some of yous might know. Some of yous probably don't want to admit, you know.
I was going to say, come on, everyone knows the any guesses.
Yeah, you guys are screwed, because if you don't have boobs, you just, I might as well just go now. But yeah,
but that though, like,
it just went crazy.
Where did that come from? Because that was really
that was just like, I got a cool V8 in one day. It was an R8. It was probably one of the most expensive cars I had. I had all my money tied up in it. I was really stressed having it, because you have to build some sort of brand to sell those types of cars. You have to have a good reputation. You have to be around a while. And people, you know, took the piss out of me at the beginning. I don't blame them. They're like, who's this one, you know, trying to sell cars in Wicklow? And it was a little bit of fake till you make it, and I think everyone probably understands what's that like. You just have to keep going. And yeah, so it was just a quick video, low cut top. I'm shocked you're all here listening to me, to be honest with you, because it's not like I invented fire or anything. This is you know, and it's men and cars, like, that is it, that's my audience, you know. So of course I played into that, which, you know, we've gone a little bit one way now. So I think there was a bit of shock to that, a bit of controversy, but that also built the brand then as well behind it, because I just kept building the business. So yeah, it was a quick video, 10-second video. Any guesses? Can you guess the sound? It was like a man's favourite sound, you know, with a woman going, any guesses? So it just went completely viral, and yeah, everyone just went mental.
I think you're undervaluing yourself a little, because there's two things you spot with what you do, and what a lot of people, creators in particular, who do really well in the space of social and content. It's all about testing and learning until you find a repeatable format. And you find a repeatable format that nobody else has, that becomes your secret sauce. And you do it time after time after time again, and you can scale to by no means. And I think the second thing is, you remind me a bit of the, again, I'm going to mention his name within the first 20 words of me, the Michael O'Leary School of Marketing. You're not afraid to do something disruptive and different and go against the crowd, because when it comes to marketing, when it comes to anything you do to try and stand out, the easiest step to always take is do the opposite of what everybody's saying and doing, because that's what's going to generate attention. So those two things alone, you're probably undervaluing what you did. You mightn't have realised you were doing it intentionally, but you're doing it naturally. And they're two really important things in such a cluttered space like social media and content. To actually, it's half the battle of standing out. People will try and over-construct, overthink it, and overdo it. But it's all about testing and learning, because the audience will tell you what they love and what they don't love. And when they do it and you find it, you do it again and again and again and again, and you grow. Again, you see guys out there in Ireland, the younger kids who are like Protein Boy. Again, protein bar. He literally just said that word time and time again. People absolutely, now he's making rap songs and he's doing content partnerships and he's absolutely making a living out of it. Because again, he found a repeatable format that was unintentional. He knew he was onto something and he scaled it.
At what point does it get stale?
Who knows? Again, it depends. There's a life cycle to it. And then it's all about pivoting and seeing how he can grow. It's like, there's like, I jokingly used to talk about the life cycle of an influencer in Ireland. You know, you do something on the internet, you grab attention, you get there, you build a following. When you build a following, you literally pimp every brand partnership that you can to monetize as quickly as you can. When you've kind of hit saturation point and every brand has used you too much, you then set up a podcast. And then you talk about some sort of mental breakdown you had off the back of all of this. And then once you do that, you write a book. And then when you write a book, you might get an RTE player series. And then after that, you might get an RTE documentary. And then you rinse and repeat and figure out what the path is next. You constantly evolve and figure it out. And once you hit a point of saturation, you'll kind of know. The money will dry up. The engagement, the views will drop. So you have to pivot. People who understand the importance of brand building and IP will know that the IP is the important part. How you productize that in multiple ways is where you can constantly win.
How do brands do it? Because we've got founders in the room tonight. Many of them are building founder-led companies now. How do they do it themselves, for themselves and the company?
Like, the product is half the work. If the product is good enough, the marketing and how you talk about it is easier. And then the beauty of what's going on in the world of brand and content is we're enjoying following the story, the trials, the tribulations, the success, the failures, the trauma, the sweat and the tears. That's content. That's people can buy into and see the realities of running a business and a startup. That's real. That's what people look for in content. They don't want overproduced bollocks. And like, again, the likes of a Stephen Bartlett gets it right to an extent, but he overdoes it sometimes. But like, brand IP is important because that's what people want. People want to follow the story, the warts and all. And then if the product's good at the same time, it's just an easy sell.
What about you then, Nadia? How do you think about it?
I think a lot of the time people want to show people what they want them to see.
Yeah.
But for me, it's no, show them what they want to see.
Bingo.
So a lot of the time, I don't even show a car. Like, the car will be at the back. I'll be talking about a car, but I'm not telling you how you hear me here. I'm trying to sell you this car. I'm just doing something totally crazy or, you know, doing some sort of production film or a skit or just something totally not to do with the car. But the car is there and you know the car is for sale and you know the brand and you know me and you know you can go onto my website and see the car. And
how did you come across that subtlety though? Because that subtlety is so hard because you're trying to go, oh, and this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
How did you come across that subtlety so early?
I just think it was by accident again. It was just getting in front of the camera. Again, that's the double-edged sword. I put myself out there. And then you get the clap back. It's just boobs, you're a bimbo, you don't know what you're talking about. So then you have to do the graft behind there and you actually have to show people, no, I have substance here. And this is just to get your attention. And once you get their attention, you reel them in then with everything else. And that just takes time. And, you know, as you said, everything has a life cycle. So when the any guesses stopped working, I had to think of something else. So I then basically got in touch with all the TikTokers that were really popular at the time. And I did a TikTok series where I went out to Protein Boar and Garen and everyone and I picked them up and we did really good skits. So one was Dirty Dancing, but there was a car in it that I had for sale or, you know, different bits and pieces like that. So it's just constantly coming up with stuff and realizing that, you know, this could do shit, but the next one could do well, and just don't stop trying.
What was the other one?
Sammy from Lucky Day.
That was hilarious. The beef you created.
Yeah, I do a lot of beefs. I do a lot of call outs. And again,
explain that to people, because that was very cool.
That was genius.
Yeah, and I think it's the same with Michael O'Leary. Like, you know, I've always looked up to him. I think he's amazing. And it's just going against the grain the whole time.
But you created a fake
fight beef.
Between
fake
you and
fight with me and another girl because people love that.
Well, like, again,
do you know what I mean?
There's modesty there, but there's, and it might feel unintentional, but it's natural because the learning you can apply from that is like when people are on social, they're not looking to buy a car in that moment in time.
Yeah, but they like, might in the future.
They might in the future. And so like the main reasons, and we talked about it when I was on the previous podcast, it was like the two main ride or dies for me is like social media is about entertainment and escapism at a very simplistic level. If you're not showing up for those moments when people are jumping on their phone, between a break, on a commute, sitting on the loo for 25 minutes, and everybody in the room does it, and if again, you're lying if you don't sit in the toilet on social media, it's small pockets of the days, and you're looking for entertainment and escapism from the shit show that's going on in the world. So all of that content is doing that. You don't have to sell the product that moment in time because they're not ready at that moment.
Yeah.
But when you talk about it in simple marketing terms, it's mental availability. So when they are thinking about a car, they are thinking at that moment in intent when they're going to make that purchase, who is probably going to be, you know, floating around the back of my head? Any guesses?
Yeah. Yeah, and they think of you and they feel that they can connect to you very easily. Then you're online, they can send a DM into Asher Motors. They might get me most of the time.
Yeah, how does it work? Because that's the thing I think people won't get is like, oh, you're just funny skits. Mm. So what? So how does it work?
What do you mean?
How do you sell cars? How do you see it drop down through the funnel?
Yeah, so I sell cars on social media. So a lot of the time, because the platform is so big, when a car does go up for sale, it's getting seen by everyone it possibly can at that moment in time. I don't have to depend on somebody going onto the traditional websites on Cars Own Done Deal for looking at a car. Everyone is seeing it. you know, millions. And if you get a viral video, you could get 3 million people that have seen that car. So that will generate leads, and it will just get you very quickly. Like, selling cars is all about turnover, which I'm sure a lot of businesses are. So it will just get you to that sale as quick as possible. And brand building at the same time, and having a bit of
step
fun.
By step though. Step are by people step. DMing you? Are people
DM. Yeah, it's more DM on Instagram.
Okay,
TikTok.
So people will see the video, DM. They'll see the video. What's the story?
Yeah, hey, I'm interested. Like, I remember on a Sunday night, and like when I started, now we've kind of taken that back a bit, but I was open till 11 o'clock every night, and people might think it's crazy, but when you're competing with so many garages out there, I needed to get those extra sales outside of business hours to build the business. So I remember one Sunday night, and I could never understand why other garages wouldn't open on a Sunday. Sure, there's a lot of people that work 6 days a week, truckers and that, and they have the Sunday free. Yeah. It's just those little extra sales I was getting, and kind of going, great, and everyone else is closed, I'm open. And I remember one night I took a call at 11 o'clock at night, and guys in Sligo, he left a deposit on the phone, he came out the next morning and bought the car. So it's always been kind of available to get back to people really quickly, to just get that sales process done.
You're selling high-end things here. You're not flipping 20 quid journals. Like, yes, you're selling high-end stuff.
I want them gone, all right? I don't want them sitting in the forecourt for too long.
Are you selling 20 quid journals yet?
That's going to be the plan. Seeding, Michael. Let's call it seeding. Now they're all thinking, I'd love it.
Have I ruined the spoiler for later?
Oh, stop.
No, it's just things, a free podcast.
I know.
but talk to me, though. Like, I want to understand this process, because like, someone might be spending 100 grand with you. Are they literally DMing you going, hey, Nadia, saw this?
Yeah, pretty much. Or some people, look, you get a very small percentage that's not on social media, and they will come to you through traditional channels. They'll call the office, whatever. But a lot of the time, and the great thing is, they feel like they know me already. I am who I am, you know. So there's that connection straight away that I'm buying a car off you. And they want to buy a car off Ashford Motors. And the other side of it is, because the platform's so big, I do videos, a lot of other businesses that buy cars off me, it's like free advertising for them. So why wouldn't they want to buy with Ashford Motors when they get a video out of it, which internally gets them a lot of views for their business? I've boosted so many businesses that have bought cars off me. So it's kind of, it's good for both.
How much do you think social has brought into your business in terms of ratio of social versus traditional?
80% social. Wow. Yeah, I buy most of my stock now through social media, or at least I'm trying, like I'm getting out there, you know. A lot of the times you get it through other traders, main dealers, but I've been buying privately for the last couple of years, and it's great because you do get a better deal that way as well.
What's the most expensive car you've sold on a DM?
Sold through Instagram, an 80 grand R8, 2008 R8. It was through one of my first NESs, and that's when I knew there was something there. I know I didn't know what it was. I was taking a chance. I was getting a lot of abuse, but I knew there had to be something there.
Tell me about, from a business point of view then, big moving ship, plane, like Ryanair. How do you see that translate across? Like, what were you being judged on?
To set up, frankly?
No, with Ryanair, what were you being judged? So Nadia can go, okay, I put up any guesses. I got a DM 2 hours later. Cause, effect. With you, massive brand, hundreds of millions of people traveling. What were you being judged on a monthly basis, going, yeah, that worked, Michael? Yeah, no, it didn't.
Well, there was nothing judged, because nothing existed before I went in. And
flex.
but it was interesting, because like, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Like, if your product's good enough, the marketing is easy. It's mental availability. It's probably sales motion, a few other things. Ryanair is a business, and again, I love this. This is my favorite thing I ever experienced in there was, we were in a meeting, the marketing director at the time, now CMO, another story, the brand director and myself, and O'Leary goes to them, listen, I understand what marketing is in theory. I understand why it's needed, but I can probably predict that we will hit our target of 120, I think it's 25 or 26 million passengers by 2026, just by the product alone, and not have one person out in that floor of over 100 marketeers and 100 people. He went to the two of them, what's the role of marketing then for this business? Silence. It's fucking brilliant. Because they didn't know how to answer. When I came in, I had a carte blanche opportunity to figure out how to use social for the brand and business. It's a business who doesn't invest in marketing, because they obsess about every inch and every cost to put it back in the product. And I needed to figure out what was the best way to do it. They were trying to, again, at a time where they kind of lost their way, it was like, oh, we want to be this warm customer care fluffy brand. Some marketeers came in outside of Ryanair who didn't understand Ryanair clearly and tried to do this. And I was like, that's fucking bollocks. Nobody's going to believe that. So something had to be done. So I was asked to develop a strategy, figure out what's the type of team and how do we carry it forward. Now, again, I'm not going to take credit for completely transforming Ryanair's marketing. It sounds great in a one-liner. It does great for opening doors. But it always existed. Like what I did when I came in there, I didn't do anything new that Michael O'Leary hasn't done for 25 years. Love him or hate him, he's the most polarizing person who understood how to play public relations so, so well. It was inherent. It was in the DNA. It was all already there. I took that and some of the problems that they were facing in the world of customer experience and perception, and I brought them all together in a new medium that could do the exact same what he was doing, but in this space. And I just put it all together, put the right team together, unlocked and drive it forward. Yes, there was brand strategy. Yes, there was thinking and thought. Yes, there was operational stuff, but it was actually quite simple. And I guess the biggest learning I always get from these things when I talk to people I work with now is when you get to the point of a strategic decision, it's meant to be simple. If it's not, it's not good strategy. It needs to be something that's actionable and something that is different than what everybody else is doing, that you give a perceived value in order to get value back from people. So it had to come to a point where it was that simple. It was over-engineered. If it was doing what everybody else was doing, it was going to blend in and be just this vanilla corporate bullshit everybody else does.
So what did you say? You're like, right, here's the strategy. We're doing X. What was it?
It was, again, we talked about this before, so hopefully I don't get too repetitive either. And again, you can listen back to my spiel and the previous one as well. But we went through insight. Again, strategy for us, brand strategy, is based on what some people call the four C's. The four C's are customer, company, culture, and the category. And you mine insight to figure out what are the things that are there that you know that you inherently have that nobody else has. That you can understand what's going on in the category, that you can do something different. That you understand what the customer needs, their behaviors, their motivations, and what is happening in culture right now that you can bring together to figure out your positioning in the market. So we put all those together, and then you identify, well, what's a problem that exists across all of that insight, and how do we think we can fix it, and how does it manifest in the world of social media? So when I got to it, there were three problems in the strategy work that I developed. But again, being a half strategist, half execution type person, I never claimed to be the best strategist in the world. So when I look back, it was actually one problem existed. The perception of flying with Ryanair's expectations were way too high for the majority of people. And this caused a lot of friction in the world. But the friction wasn't with the boomers or the old people. Sorry if there's any older people in here, and the language is awful. And again, I don't want to look at people in case I feel I'm calling you old. But these people grew up with Ryanair from the get-go. In 1985, Ryanair democratized travel. It created a product that allowed people to connect and travel around Europe for 50 quid. Traveling before was a luxury. So when you think of the general public, the working class people, they couldn't travel back then. So for the boomers, you could go on your two or three sunny holidays a year and top up your wrinkly tan and come back and love Ryanair. And then you had the Gen Zers who are like, well, we haven't got a pot to piss in, but we know digital. We understand the product. We just want to see the world and have crack any time of the day, because why? We can. We can go to bloody Italy, grab a pizza for a tenner on a 5 euro flight and come back the same day because we're fucking young. The problem was the millennials, us gobshites with our big silver spoons, the Celtic Tiger babies who were going, oh, what? This experience is shit. Why aren't I getting a heated towel or a USB charger or internet, even though your flight cost a fucking tenner? That perception, for some reason, because we're such a privileged bunch of bastards, that it was like, this is causing this unnecessary tension and negativity about Ryanair, whereas, yeah, like, without drinking the Kool-Aid, it literally opened up Europe. You could travel to any part for the price of a can of Coke and a packet of crisps, It's absolutely madness. But yet people were pissed off with the experience.
Is that because people grew up with it or what? They just knew it should be 30 quid to go to London.
But yes and no, but it's just they were just privileged. They expected more for less all the time because of the generation we grew up in.
So you were like, right, we're going to strike back on them.
We're going to strike back on them because they're causing the friction that we don't need. Like Ryanair became this meme because like you go and you'd ask Gary, Jesus, see, you have a lovely tan. Were you in Marbella again for the fifth time this year? Who'd you fly where? Ryanair. The default every time is... fucking Ryanair, because it's just inherent in Irish culture and English culture.
Yeah,
we all fucking do it. But we yet forget, oh, I went to Marbella for the fifth time this year and only cost me 20 quid for the flight. But yet, they're a shower of bastards. No, he created a fucking insane product. We can travel around the world, but it causes friction. We're like, no, we're going after those.
So they were like, game ball, go for it.
Yeah, go for it, big time. Because like the biggest friction and where you complain about it is the Karens and the Keats go to social. So it's just we went, okay, well, how can we remind people about the product that we've created and democratized travel for everybody and actually start to turn it into a thing that could be really good marketing? So the last piece of the puzzle was the culture. It was the internet. And, you know, we were talking about earlier, the best self of Instagram that created this fake filtered nature. Yeah. And like it completely lost its way. COVID came and TikTok came to town. And, and TikTok has become, I guess, a breath of fresh air for social media because people were tired. And more importantly, the younger generations of this fake self. They wanted real. So much crap was going on in the world that they were sick of people trying to be the curated best self, and they wanted real, they wanted trauma bond together on the internet. We went, well, if we take this tone that we had, if we take the needs and wants and that it wants for like unpolished real content, and then if we turn the biggest annoying group of people and the friction they have into entertainment while educating them on the Ryanair model, we might be onto something here. Now, we did lots of other stuff where we tried to, again, grab attention like O'Leary would have done in the olden days over, you know, topics that were going on in the world, like shitting all over Eamon Ryan. He does left, right and centre, pissing
don't
off teachers.
Don't talk to me about Eamon Ryan.
We were...
I'm definitely going to fucking ask you now.
You have to. Like, we did that to grab attention, but we used this, and there's a guy called Gary Vee, you might be familiar with him in the social media world, and he uses this phrase called jab, jab, hook, and like... The analogy he uses is not the same analogy I would interpret it, but we knew that if we talked about what was going on in the world in a self-deprecating, irreverent way, we were saying what the world was saying, but everybody else was afraid to say it. Like, take the Tories. Yeah. Like, lockdown, Partygate, Boris Johnson. Nobody was really saying that you've made us stay indoors for years, and yet you shower of bastards are doing what you're doing. Well, we went, well, fuck it. You've decimated travel. We're going after you. Yeah. Now, at that time, like, I didn't have the permission we had after that.
That's what I was going to ask you.
That
you?
Was the come to Jesus moment. Like, that was like, I don't know if you remember in the UK, they had this table for, like, the levels of COVID permissions. And it went out. And I don't know if you've seen the piece of content we did on it, but we did the right-hand side version where we actually did our interpretation of the Tories' rules. And one of those lines were, off their tits... On it, like, and a brand coming out with this, and we went out with it. Like, when that went live, like, my boss came up over the desk and he's like, what the fuck have you done? And I was like, just stick it out. If it works, great. If it doesn't, let's talk about it then.
Yeah.
And it just completely exploded, and we went again. But, like, why was that one in particular important? Because at this time, O'Leary knew nothing about what we were doing, Eddie Wilson knew nothing. Like, this is just happening. I had the freedom to figure this out.
Right.
But the turning point for us was when that went live, the next day the Financial Times wrote a full-page article about that post about brands need to be more Ryanair. And again, why is that important? We'll get to in a second. 4 or 5 days later, the Sunday Times put that little old piece of social media content in page 7 print of the Sunday Times UK on what we did. Why is it important? Because Michael O'Leary's not on social media like us. The investors are not on social media like us. The investors read the Financial Times and the Sunday Times. And we got eyeballs with the most influential people. And when that happened, that was printed out and there was a handwritten note put on our table going, great job, keep it up, from O'Leary and from Eddie Wilson. Because he knew that we knew his style of marketing and what was right. And that was literally like the papal smoke coming up. Off you go, lads. And we took it forward from there.
Nadia.
Yeah. I did what he did, yeah. just Eamon Ryan, like that.
No. Yeah. So talk to me.
Yeah. Eamon
that's
Ryan.
The big... No, we'll get there. Yeah. We're relaxing, Eamon Ryan. No,
is he here? Is he?
Sleeping in the corner.
What? Like, that's a very detailed strategy, right? Yeah. How do you think about it? Because I know you do, and don't play it down now. Yeah. Like, oh, I just do a bit. Like, how
I
do
think
you
about
think
it
about
after.
It?
Genuinely, I do. I think, yeah, no, definitely what he said. That's. I think it's being honest. You know, as you said, you called something out that was happening in the pandemic with the Tories flying and that. It was the same with me with EVs. I think when the NEGSs stopped working, I had to kind of find a different strategy, and that was kind of looking at the market and kind of just seeing what wasn't working and what really I couldn't get a fundamental value out of as a business. And when I was actually just pissed off that morning, I went on TikTok and I said, look, I'm not going to be selling EVs because I just can't make money out of them. They are, you know, unpredictable at the moment. They're going down in the UK. It's happening here. Everybody's talking about it behind closed scenes, but no one is talking to the customer about it. And that just went absolutely mental. Went to the UK, Ireland, everything. And that boosted the brand again because it was like, oh, a dealer's talking about this. So this must be true. So, yeah, it was kind of just using what people want to, I suppose, say about me and kind of throwing it back at them, you know, in a funny way, in a kind of a clever way.
So similar to Michael's
yeah,
point
very,
there.
Yeah,
you
very
were scanning
so.
The market just, looking to see, right, what's kind yeah. of like mispriced attention.
Yeah, and I think there's even trolls would be a big thing as well. So a lot of people
literally took the word out of my mouth. What's,
yeah,
how do you deal with that?
Yeah, like a lot of, especially personal branding. If you have a business, you want to build it and you want to be, you know, just as a personal brand, people get afraid of trolls. Actually, trolls, you need them. And I think you guys are the same as well, where I see your responses to some of the trolls and it's fantastic. And you just need to get them head on, be kind of sarcastic back, funny. And then people see how you react to that and they actually get behind you. And don't just block and delete and run away, because that's the easiest thing to do. But actually, if you stand up to it, you'd be surprised how quickly a troll runs away, because they do, you know.
And can turn it actually into
you
entertainment.
Can turn it around into another totally. Viral moment.
There's a lovely Kobe Bryant quote. I have to use it. Booze don't block dunks. Like, and that's where a lot of people are afraid in these spaces to actually be yourself and actually persevere.
Yeah, because no one wants to be, you know, you don't want to be hit.
It's
hit
tough.
In the chest. It's,
you're human.
It's tough,
like, you're
you
going
know?
To feel shit when people yeah. go after you. But if you can compartmentalize that and understand that no matter what you say or do, there are people who will agree with you and people who don't. And then there are people over here who will take it out of context for a number of reasons. They don't like you.
Yeah.
They do it for clout. Or they're just a dickhead.
And there's a lot of people watching for a very long time before they even give you the last judgment. Mm. They're waiting and waiting. And then eventually they go, oh, I actually like that person.
Okay.
So all of a sudden you could have no supporters and then you have a load of supporters 5 months later because there's a lot of silent people, you know, behind the scenes as well.
So you take the negativity and use it as fuel then?
Yeah, I use it for ideas, you know. Yeah, I think you use it for ideas. Like some of my best videos have come from trolls making comments about me. And then I'm like, hang on a second, that's a great idea for a video. Let's do it.
And it never bothers you at all?
It did at the beginning. Definitely at the beginning, I used to question my sanity. What am I doing? My poor mum. You know, I didn't know what to do. She was literally going to get rid of me because I come from a finance background and here I was on TikTok going, any guesses, please buy my car. So, yeah, it was tough at the beginning, definitely. But you build confidence in yourself as you go on and as the business does well and as you do what you say and you, I suppose, show people. You can show them that actually, no, this isn't who I am. This is who I am. So and me marketing and being kind of out there, but of keeping the business professional here and doing everything behind the scenes to keep the business up, keep the sales up. But it then allows you to market how you want to market. You know, as I said before, sex sells, boob sells, but you're not going to have a long term business from that. That's just to get the attention. You know,
what's working, what's not working? 2024 coming into 2025, a room full of founders. What's been working for you and what is going to be the big one in 2025?
Well, the one I'll always start with and I'll never stop is strategy. Like, there are so many people in our spaces who aren't being strategic, and strategy doesn't have to be over-engineered. It just needs to be, you know, simple and understood, and a problem that allows you to actually solve and ladders back to brand or business, and it allows you to have focus. And more importantly, like in the world of social, where it's so fragmented, so many channels, so many ways and tactics to actually use the platforms, that people immediately jump in and they get lost in tactics, and tactics is not strategy.
What's the difference?
Well, again, if I could explain what strategy is, again, it is trying to identify a problem to solve and then putting a set of guiding principles to solve it to take you from where you are now to where you need to get to next. Tactics is just doing, the executing. Strategy is the big thinking. It's the direction. It's the action you need to take. The tactics are just the small pieces, the building blocks of actually doing the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month. And a lot of people, when they talk strategy, they're really talking tactics, you know, and that there's a difference. So for me, it's in such a cluttered, competitive, large space, the realities of trying to compete with others in the category that may have more budget, more resource, and more time and brand equity built in these platforms and trying to do what they do, that's difficult. But strategy allows you to think, well, what's the opposite I can do? Or how can I do it in a way that is different to them that allows me to get more attention or grow? That's making a set of decisions in order to do that. That's good thinking. So for me, it'll always be the case, it'll be strategy first. Then when it comes to the execution of it, big in 2025, that depends, because it depends on your brand and business. It depends on how far you are in the life cycle of a startup or an enterprise business. No strategy is the same. No tactics are the same, and no use of social is the same. And even I'm trying to unpack at the moment, and I put something on LinkedIn yesterday around fast and slow organic content strategy. Like organic is non-paid, non-creator partnership content. Create content you make yourself for yourself. And even in that, there's two interesting spaces that are starting to appear in social. And I'm trying to put a narrative or trying to make it make sense. The fast is the newsfeed. It's the immediate, high reach, constant high frequency approach to content to try and grab top of mind brand awareness or attention. And if that's your problem you need to solve, great. That's probably one way of doing it. But there are other things that are emerging which are more slower tactics. You mightn't see the immediate results of, like, you're navel-gazing at a Ryanair. Jesus, Ryanair got a TikTok. In 3 days, they get 3 million views. They're fucking amazing. You're not understanding why they're doing it or the value that brings, and you get lost and you then get frustrated and you're not thinking about it. So fast is one. The second is then what I'm trying to unpack, and bear with me, the language is not right, and I'm trying to find a simpler way to explain it. Then there's the slow strategy. And what you'll start to identify, and which is big in my view for certain products and services and categories, is the slower side of it, which is search-relatable social content. And that is, you've got your newsfeed stuff, your trends, your content that gets instant reach, but there is a space and a place where social is becoming the new search engine. So when people search for hotels, food, products, recipes, movies, reviews, they're less likely going to Google these days and they're going to TikTok and Instagram. But what happens is, and what they're trying to build behind the scenes, and I'll give you an example, TikTok have started to bring through Wikipedia search and Wikipedia definitions on their search engine on TikTok. So when you search for IKEA, you will see at the top of the search in TikTok, the Wikipedia search for IKEA and the company description, who they are. Underneath it will be the video content that's ranking and being the most optimized for search in IKEA. So where am I getting to? You might be a brand and business that in your marketing mix, the problems you need to solve, reach mightn't be your problem. Conversion mightn't be your problem. But that last middle funnel thing of trying to convert people may be the problem. But yet you're living in a space where you're trying to trend hop, thinking, navel gazing, I want instant reach, where there's this big space and solution in social that is search, that if people are searching there, you mightn't get the immediate views and reach on that content that you create. But that's content evergreen that's playing a role in when people are in that discovery mindset or behavior and they want to make a decision on a product or service and they go to these platforms. If your content is strong enough, if your content's ranked well enough, it's going to appear there. And it's going to get views and it's going to actually maybe convert people further down the line. So the last piece is community as well, which I won't labor on. But my basic point is social is more than just making content. On the surface, it looks like everything is content. When you publish it to your channels, it looks like you're publishing content. But there's so many different ways and values you can use platforms and content depending on what the problem is for your business. And as I said earlier, it depends and it's different. Can you do both? Yes, of course. Can you do both on the same channels? I'm not so sure. You need to be pretty special and good at it to do it. So here's another trend maybe that we talk about. Let's call it satellite social media channels. Channels that have different roles and different purposes. If you're a product or a brand and you need to do both, and you're a social first, you're a lean business, and you don't have the volume to spend on paid media or TV or out of home or other types of marketing, and you're scrambling, your challenger brand scrappy, and you need platforms like social to work, maybe you can do both if you have two separate channels that serve a different purpose. One could be your brand channel, that's the storytelling, entertainment-led, instant reach, top-of-mind awareness, and your other channel might be search-friendly, where it's all about discoverability. You know and you're safe in knowing that content I'm going to make is a slow burner. It's going to take time, but I know incrementally over time, that content's probably going to get hundreds of thousands of reach because I've optimized it well, I've ranked it well, and it's appearing in these spaces and places doing a really good job.
So it's expectation management, right? Different expectations.
And
different
it's making the right decision based on time, resource, and budget. Because everyone, like, I have people come to me all the time going, we want to be great on social. We want to be the next Ryanair. And I said, okay, but let's take a step back. You've got one social media person who's trying to do this. Like, to deliver the size of what even we did was a team of 8 people. And that was delivering 60 pieces of content a week. And that 60 pieces of content wasn't done in overnight. That took conditioning, repetition. There's a huge time and investment to manage these channels that people really don't understand. Some people get lucky, don't get me wrong. And some people are very good at it because they've got that set of skills. But it takes time to invest. So it's managing expectations on what you can do, but also understanding the realities of how and the resource and scale you have. And you can't do it all at one time. So go back to the importance of strategy. Is like thinking about your strategy is great, but you need to think about how you operationalize it too. And if you don't have the people or the budget to do it, well, you have to make a decision. What's going to get me the best impact to prove to my other partners or my investors that my investment here is actually going to return in something? Then when you show them impact, you can go, hey, this little old thing with children posting shit on the internet is actually a great space. If you give me another person or maybe 100 grand to get an agency in to do it, not only can I do this, I can maybe do paid media, or I can work with creators, or I can make more organic content, or I can build that second channel that does both brand and discovery. But what everybody's doing at the moment, they're just jumping in and like just going straight into the tactics, trying to compete with everyone else, do the same thing, and fucking failing.
Yeah. How do you think about it? Smaller business.
Yeah.
How do you balance between being a media brand and a car brand?
Yeah, and I think what you're saying about strategy, like, so for, I think when you're a smaller business, you can execute quicker. So a lot of, with the big companies and corporations, they've got the market media manager, they've this person, they've that person, there's red tape, this red tape. With me, I'm like, that's cool, that's a trend, let's get it out in the next 5 minutes. And there's a power in that to quickly, if there's some opportunity that day, if there's a trend, if there's a song, if there's something going on. Because if you do it next week, once everyone in the boardroom has had a chat about it, doesn't matter anymore. Yep. So that way I'm lucky because I do a lot of the videos myself. So I can just get them out straight away. So then you're actually getting ahead of everyone. And then you see people then doing the videos after you. But you've already got the first couple of million views. And then after that, it dives down.
Yeah, first to market.
Yeah. So just opportunities, you know, thinking every day is an opportunity. And I think, as you were saying, a lot of people just want to, I want to be like that person, but they don't see the grafting behind of it, the countless of videos that don't do well, but you still have to do them. And some people will do a video once a week and why am I not viral? You need to do it 5 times a day. You know, you just do. And whether that's just one person in your team dedicated to doing it, just start small, simple. If the owner wants to get into it, that's always the best, I think, because you're putting a face to the business. You know, have a bit of crack with it. Don't take yourself too seriously. Don't have an ego. I'm kind of a different level to you guys, but I understand what you're talking about. But
the principles are the same. The principle is the same. But let's even play like devil's advocate with like Nadia's approach to it, because small businesses struggle to make right decisions here, and they look at maybe Nadia and they go, how does she do it? I don't have the time to do this because I'm so it, like, this is my point in good strategy, that you also have to make a decision that I don't have the free time, because your product or service may involve you coding 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
So how the hell do you make content if you're coding 10 hours a day? Like, you might be making physical products, or like, even the business and the type of business you have can dictate the decision you make and how you do social. Because, like, if people can't be like Nadia, where you're walking around and you can do it in that way within your day, well, then there's other ways to do it.
You do it outside of your day.
Yeah.
A lot of days I was working 7 days a week, and after work I was doing videos.
Yeah, talk to me about this, because this is the big thing everyone says. Yeah. Oh, I'd love to do social, but, as if it's kind of like you said, it's this optional extra, or I'd love to, but.
Yeah.
So how do you think about it then? You literally grasp.
I literally do it every single day. If I can now, look, at the odd day I don't, but I try and find opportunities every day, and then I would do maybe the professional videos a little bit more strategic. But in terms of TikTok, viral brand awareness, just getting the brand out there the whole time, that's every single day. And I could be working all week and I'd still book my videographer to come out at 6 o'clock, and we would film till 10 o'clock, you know, on a Sunday, any day. And that is, it just goes part and parcel with the business.
Why do you think there's this separation in people's minds, especially business owners, going, oh, I'd love to do social, but... Like, why do they think it's like an optional extra?
Maybe it's I don't know, is it a generational thing, or is it that not seeing a direct, like, I did 100 videos and got no sales out of it, but you might get one out of every 10 you do. And it's just, as you said before, drawing that straight line. Hmm. You know, you might not directly get a sale from it today, but you'll get one next week or the week after, or someone will think of you when they're thinking of a car. They'll think of Ashford Motors. So, you know, it's just, people want to pay off very quickly. They want to see a return straight away. But what it depends on the type of business you have, whether it's a long-term thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, look, people think it's easy. It's not.
No.
Like, people will get lucky, don't get us wrong. There are people who will get a moment. And but
you can't keep getting lucky either. No. You get lucky once doesn't mean everyone's going to know your business. No.
It's conditioning. It's reps. It's getting better with repetition. And, like, again, knowing that, it could take 100, 200 times before you actually start to see it. But on the platforms, and you get rewarded. You get rewarded with consistency and repetition. So you've got to put in the reps. If you don't, it's a tough place to play. But if you don't have the time for that, well, then there's other options.
Yeah, maybe you hire someone to do it then.
Correct, that's it. And with creators who can do make the content, or even go one more where you can go paid first and not even do organic at all. Like, there's so many ways to use these platforms based on your time, resource and budget. But if you're going to go down the organic route, like a Ryanair or like Nadia does, that takes effort, conditioning.
You're going to pay in some way, whether it's time or money.
Yeah.
But like, if you can't, there are other ways to do it, like paid first, like creators. You don't have to do it all. Mm-hmm. You do one and do one really well, then you start to prove a business case that we might be able to do more here.
And some people don't want to get in front of the camera. So if you get someone quite good, you know, who could, a good creator, as you said, who could do your videos, but also aligns with your brand and your business as well.
Yep.
You know?
So kind of do like a wrap up, kind of like highlights, lowlights. I wouldn't even call them lowlight, highlight and learning, right? What's been your highlight of the year and learning of the year, Michael?
Oh, low light.
Highlight? We've got learning.
No, I'll go to low light because I can think of those faster. low light is, I started off this change 12 months ago when I was on your podcast where gardening leave was over. I could start talking publicly about what went on.
Started bubbling up to the media.
Bubbling up to the media, starting to milk every second of it. Low lights for me is, I had the greatest intention of having better work-life balance. I wanted to build a business and go out my own, but I also wanted to spend more time for me and family. I have failed at that dramatically. And the biggest learning, which I imagine so many people in this room can relate to, I did not know how fucking hard it is to start up a business. I'm a dreamer. I'm a creative person at heart, but it is fucking hard. My low light is, I've taken probably a week off this year so far, and I'm hitting a wall that I need to fix. I need to get better balance. Highlights, there has been way too many. Way too many in seeing how I'm building something that the market wants, and I've traveled the world, which is a crazy thing to say. I've been to New York, where I was in Meta and Facebook's head office talking in front of their social media people. So how meta can you get? The people who do social media for the social media platforms, and trying to teach them how to use their own freaking platforms. I went to Perth to speak in front of 1,000 people in a stadium. I've talked in front of people, just storytelling. This random airline, this dude who just put things together that just made sense, put a really great team together, probably got lucky along the way. And, you know, I've been to countries I've never been to before, never probably would have been to before because of it. So it's been an amazing journey. It's tiring, but I've had the privilege where it's a good energy. It's not an energy where I'm developing a product or a business where I'm struggling to bang on doors, go to conferences and events where I have to pay for a stand to try and pitch a new product, to beg VC people to give me your money because I'm onto something special. Mm. I've just been swanning around.
I think you're triggering a lot of people.
Trigger
warning. Too late.
I empathize because now
stop
I...
Stop crying.
I empathize because I need to make that. I need to go on that journey now because I think I'm onto something that is scalable, and I need to figure that out. Mm. So I'm going to go on the journey everyone's going. But for the last year, I've been swanning about, having the crack on stage, talking shit about this, and that's a very privileged position to be in.
You're like a paler Gary Vee, actually, when I look at you now.
Aldi version Gary Vee.
Like that.
And I actually put that in my bio when I get up on stage.
Yeah?
The Aldi version.
There we go. Marketing.
There we go.
Highlights, low lights, / learning.
Low lights. I remember there was a time where when I just started doing the videos on TikTok and I was going for my SAMI accreditation, which is basically the motor industry body oversight. And somebody had put up a comment on TikTok to say, I was just out in an SAMI meeting and Nadia is bringing down the whole motor trade with her behaviour. And I actually believe that to be true. And I remember sitting in my office bawling, crying, going, oh my God, what have I done? Why did I do this? And that was such a low life because I thought my videos was going to actually impact me moving forward in the business. And then the following day, I got a call from SIMI and they're like, no, you have it. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, no, you have it. Everything's above board. Because they come out and they do an inspection and make sure, you know, your insurance is right and your books are right and all that type of jazz. And I was like, oh, I can't believe I actually believe that, you know. So that was a really low time. And I think as well, transitioning from just grafting, making money to then moving away from that day-to-day stuff and having to give that power to staff and kind of be a different type of the business, raising funds and just growing, expanding. I've just bought a new premises now. So all my focus is going on that. And yeah, just learning. Stressed.
Interesting that you both went for the low lights first. That's such a founder thing to do. Yeah. Oh, it's been hard, but
yeah.
Hopefully you're listening to the pod and you're feeling inspired. Maybe you want to do new things in your own business, or maybe you have that brilliant idea you've always wanted to bring a little bit further and see if it works. So why not right now? You listen to the majority of the guests in this show, and they've been helped by the local enterprise office at some stage in the journey. They have something for everybody. Whether you have that idea you want to develop, you want to get your products to new markets, you want to innovate your existing products, or you want to expand staff and premises, they have the supports to help. So why not today? If you want to start up or grow your business, then contact your local enterprise office today.
Give me your hot take for 25. What do you believe? Because I want to play this back at the end of the year. We're going to do this again here next year. Give me your predictions for 25 across social and business.
God, I hate predictions.
That's why they're good, because we'll play it back next year.
Fuck it.
It's for the viral clips next year.
It's for the content.
See, strategy. It's all for the strategy.
Hot take for next year. Goodbye, Elon Musk. Goodbye, X. X will die. And he is probably going to be in for a rough ride across the world. I think the US elections was going to determine how fast X was going to die. Democrats win, X would have dropped. He would have been brought through probably courts around the world for all the shit that he has done. Now, again, tech people, he's a genius. X, he's a piece of shit. It's going to die because he's going to be dragged through a lot of defamation, misinformation, fudging of politics, and he's ruined that platform. So two things are going to happen. He's either going to have to sell it, which nobody will buy, or he will wind it down. So hot take is goodbye, X.
Ooh, that is a hot take. Yes.
Hi, Elon. Love you. forgot this is recorded.
Literally for the social. It's all we need.
Don't kill me.
Nadia, Slammy Geese. Sorry, I mean hot take for 25.
I'll bring it a bit more locally. I'm just seeing trading conditions in Ireland, really. When you sell cars, you talk to a lot of different type of business owners from a lot of industries because business owners like nice cars. It's great. So what I'm seeing is a gap between rich and poor. From my perspective, anything over 100 grand is just selling. Anything in the middle, it's getting harder to shift. And anything really cheap, you can't get your hands on. That's scary to me. There's definitely an uncertain trading conditions coming. Brexit, COVID, inflation, prices. It's scary to see what might be coming down the track. So we just have to make ourselves different from the rest and just keep plugging on.
Wow. So you've seen over 100 grand is shifting?
Yeah, very quickly. So it's just I'm seeing the gap grow, and maybe your other business people are seeing that as well in their businesses, but that's definitely what I'm seeing in Ireland.
I just cry at the price of a new Land Cruiser. They look great, but 140 grand starting
price. That's crazy
price.
For a Toyota,
that's
isn't
crazy
it?
For a farmer at heart.
Here, if you see a farmer driving a Toyota, he's making serious money. And they love telling you how broke they are and how cattle isn't
cute,
making money.
Cute
and how
bastards,
they're very cute.
Coming in
and
with a bag
Cavan,
of cash
is there anyone here from Cavan?
Yeah.
Loads. Of, Mary, loads of money in Cavan. Does anyone know how many?
You know people up
you
there,
know
do you?
People. And here's a fun fact about Cavan. There's 365 lakes in Cavan.
There
you go.
I thought come on, entrepreneurs, do something with that.
One for every day of the year.
Renewable energy. Do something, guys. Come on, yeah.
Loads of money.
Hidden opportunity in 2025. Room full of founders. What's the hidden opportunity people don't know about yet?
Oh, geez, I'm the wrong person to ask that. Hidden opportunity? Oh, fuck, I don't know. frankly.
This is your whole fucking job. Is to find hidden opportunities.
Frankly, is the hidden opportunity. So investors who want to give me low interest money.
Tease them with something so they know they're investing in something good. Come on.
Yeah.
I've entertained them enough. Is that not enough?
Are you not entertained? All right, yeah. Gladiator, settle down.
I'm Paul Mescal here. No, that's awful. God, I don't know. I couldn't answer that.
Well, if X is fucked, where do you think people should be going?
It's probably more dark social and into gaming spaces is where
what's
the
dark social.
So dark social is again dark messaging apps like Discord. Funny enough, CapCut, I think I mentioned to it before as well, to me is products where Gen Alpha are immersing themselves in. They're no longer wanting to share themselves publicly online as much as us idiot millennials did and the Gen Zs have done. They are in their cliques and communities and their own worlds experiencing and sharing in those places. So Snapchat is having a reemergence. Discord is an interesting channel. Any environment that has chat or community is pretty interesting and big and people are starting to go there. So a lot of these channels that exist right now, Instagram, Facebook, they'll be around for a long period of time. But the newer generations like Gen Alpha, that's not the spaces they're playing in.
So you did have something. Mm-hmm. Hidden opportunity.
I don't have business. Anything as good as that. Hidden opportunities, I think, again, from the motor industry, we're seeing the likes of Volkswagen closing down 3 factories. EVs, I don't think they've hit their bottom yet. I think we're looking at Q2 2025 to really hit its bottom. I think there's a lot going on there. And I think just being a good independent, you know, to stand out and just look at your costs, look at your margins and that. Yeah, I don't know. TikTok. I think I've heard of a new app actually called Casper or something. I'm looking into that now, but there's a kind of a new up-and-coming app. Do you know anything about
there's
that?
There's a few. There's,
a few.
Yeah, there's a lot coming.
Yeah.
Blue Sky, Mastodon, Casper.
Yeah.
You know, they're all trying. There's Lemonade, which is a TikTok product as well.
Yeah.
So unless they get the right type of creators on board and to migrate more users across. They're a very hard sell, but they're as a most of them as products aside from Mastodon and others, which are like Discord, their server, chat, community environments, more darker social. They're still all trying to replicate what is the current products that are out there right now, and they're not going to be able to scale it.
I think TikTok Shop as well, that's coming to Ireland.
Very big, yeah.
That's going to be
TikTok
big thing
Shop,
next
TikTok
year.
Live.
Trump is in. He's got a big following on TikTok, which I think will keep boosting TikTok. Mm. So we don't have to worry about China getting fucked out.
What's your goal for next year? We're sitting down here again next year. What's the one thing you want to have done?
I want to make the product scalable in three different ways. I wanted to deliver what I'm doing now at enterprise level, but only better, which is a program of consultancy, strategy, strategic operations, and teaching the method to how they do it. I want to potentially start to then offer something that is more attractive to smaller businesses and startups, because how I'm pricing what I'm doing right now is not value to a startup, and it doesn't make sense, and it's stupid. And I actually worked with a startup this year, and they invested, but they didn't think about what I was offering, and they were expecting all this execution and success, but that's not what I do. So I'm trying to find, with the thinking that I'm trying to build as a product, how I can take the same thinking but make it usable for smaller businesses in a way that makes sense. And an example would be is doing it in a quicker sprint or accelerated manner in 3 or 4 days at a retreat where you can have a bit of crack. The third one then is the actual industry, social media professionals. I don't think they're being educated well enough. There are thought leaders and wannabe thought leaders who talk in absolutes and talk absolute bullshit. The education system is offering too much theory, not enough practice, and constantly educating. So taking the same product. The third thing is, for people familiar marketing, you might hear of a guy called Mark Ritson. And Mark Ritson will be a marketing thought leader, but he also developed at Marketing Week this MBA for brand marketing and MBA in marketing. I would love to, with the thinking and the unhealthy obsession I have with what I do, create a product, the same evolution of that product, to teach future social media professionals to do better work. So that means that with the smaller, leaner team that I have, I'm using the same core product in multiple ways that actually, fingers crossed, make a lot of bank.
I love it. It's the whole goal, right? Mm. People are afraid to say it. Nadia.
Yeah, I think I'm at that point now of expansion where my head is just very much in the game, you know. So sometimes it's hard to think about the next 12 months. I'm just trying to get through the next couple of weeks, to be honest with you. But I just want to grow the brand and grow the business and bring rare cars into Ireland and get people's passions going for cars again, motorists. I think we've really been left behind when it comes to, you know, government policies and that. We're constantly getting taxed out of it. Paying $2,500 for a V12 a year is just insane. You know, in Ireland, when you work hard, you get penalised. And that really translates to people who want nice cars. So I would love to work on that and just bring back motorists, bring back something for us, give us something, tax us on fuel, but get rid of the $2,500 a year, because there'd be so many more people driving nice cars and they'll work hard for a nice car if it was doable. Like the VRT on a supercar, let's take a Lamborghini Aventador. I brought one in for a customer a couple of weeks ago. It was 113,000 just for the vehicle registration tax. So I always say you have to be on an extra 100,000 than the same guy in the UK to have a nice car. A lot of people would want nice cars in Ireland. A lot of founders, there's not really that begrudgingness, I think, with founders and stuff, because people know each other's struggles and how hard it is to get something nice. You work hard and you have a nice car, you know. And I just want to keep pushing that, you know, to the world. Yeah, that's it. Just I want everyone to drive a V12. I know. Joe, you'll agree with me, won't you? Yeah. Loves.
All right, if you're listening at home, that's it. That is the end of your listening pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, please thank Michael and Nadia. We're now going to have a private Q&A.
And that's it for 2024. if you're still listening, thank you so much. Thank you for listening over the last 12 months. It's been a special year for me personally. The podcast has grown exceptionally and it's only really just getting going. I'll see you back here in 2025.